They're concerned with the public's safety and are protecting them from mass panic. They affirm that the world isn't quite ready to handle the fact that there is life on other planets. Who are they to keep this information from the people? That isn't the kind of military information that could cause friction among nations. But you're not speaking of just one nation, are you? You're saying there are many other nations who don't want this information to be revealed either. Yes, I told you, the Silence Group is a worldwide organization. The world is ready now for a universal governor. You mean one man ruling the destinies of the entire planet? One person with the absolute power to impose his will upon every nation. Someone like Hitler, whose dream was to conquer the world. Big Brother, maybe? Yes, Hitler, and many others like him in their own times. When you said we were going to be talking about a race of people in this world, the only one that comes to mind is the Jews. Why is it that these world rulers, like Hitler, have always had it in for the Jews? No matter where you look, you always find the Jews have been persecuted, made slaves, mass murdered, driven from their lands. Aren't we supposed to be the chosen people? Well, Chicho, there's a certain chemistry that the Jews have as a race that has continually disturbed dictators. I don't know if I could call the Yenusians Jews, but they're the first people to be recognized as the ones who cultivated your planet with life, then with teachings of the eternal God of creation. Venusians? Adam and Eve were direct descendants of Venusians. Would you call them Jews? Look, from Genesis to Revelations, your Bible starts with one God and his angels that are recorded throughout the entire planet. Names vary, but the deeds and beliefs are basically the same, despite their originating in different geographical locations. There are similarities in language, architecture, pottery, and textiles between the Hebrews and the Incas. Also between the Mayans and the Chaldeans. What I'm saying is that since ancient times, extraterrestrials have been here. So why do the Jews feel they're the only chosen people, if the biblical cosmonauts actually went all over the planet? Don't ask me that kind of question, because we would need months to come to an agreement. But let me tell you this, and I hope this answers your question. Man-made religions have always tended to twist certain meanings with the purpose of gaining attention, popularity, and lots of revenue. There's no such thing as the chosen people, that's only a motto. That's right, but there's such a thing as the Jewish race. We're all aware of that. But when it comes to what we're concerned with, there's no such thing as color, race, belief, or political affiliation. This time the people of the world are going to be chosen, although, unfortunately, only a very few. When it comes to God, there's no racial difference. Exactly. That eternal God of creation lives in the heart of anyone who wants to let him live there. The Jewish race knew they would be getting a Messiah, but for political reasons, rather than faith and intelligence. They got rid of their Messiah. Remember when I told you about that block of red granite in the Great Pyramid? It symbolizes the moment the Jews were given an equal opportunity to become part of the teachings of Christ. Those who have suffered in their past lives are going to be alive again to see the second coming of Jesus. Very grimly, I have to say that some of them are going to reject him again, but I can tell you very happily that many Jews will turn to Jesus. Believe me, they're blessed very dearly, because in order for them to accept him into their hearts, a special effort on their parts will be necessary. I find that a little difficult to believe, I said, thinking of the Hasidic Jew in Brooklyn. What do you find hard to believe? Jews turning to Jesus. It's going to be happening so close to home that if I were you, I wouldn't even get into an argument about it. When this starts happening, it'll be another fulfillment of the prophecies. When we were talking about Armageddon, you said this world king, or Antichrist, is going to make a holy war against the Jews. Yes, and I also told you that the next persecution of the Jews is going to be the wick of the dynamite that ignites Armageddon. Does the Middle East crisis have anything to do with the Jews and the great battle of Armageddon? I've said this is the beginning, and when this man declares himself the Messiah, demanding adoration from the Jews, they're going to arm and fight. This would be the opportunity for certain world leaders to do away with the Jews once and for all. The wars are going to get bloodier and more cruel, then a powerful nation will interfere, then another nation with a different point of view will want to get its share of the options. After all, there are nations in this world of yours that are completely dependent upon wars for their economy to be swinging in full operation. What happens when two nations look each other in the eye and say, "Well, now we're going to see who's the greater"? You'll see that in early 1976. The word for it is détente. You'll be getting close to the strongly to their land and their beloved Jerusalem. Their enemies will be plotting how to drive them into the ocean. Many Jews are in the most powerful nation in the world today, and when they see things getting out of hand, they'll get involved in order to stop the mass murders. Here is the moment when a powerful personality gets into power and says he's the only man who can solve the conflict in the Middle East. He'll make a peace treaty with all the dragons, false prophets, frogs, and creatures with 10 horns, who are going to be waiting among you. They're the spirits of devils, the demons. This treaty will be signed for a period of 7 years, of which 3.5 are just fine and dandy, until some fanatic tries to assassinate him. After his miraculous recovery, he will be so angry by this act of violence against him that he will show his wrath openly. You told me that this recovery would be more like coming back to life. Yes, that's why I said recovers from a fatal wound. That's why people will believe him, because they will wonder at his supernatural powers. This will encourage him to go as far as calling himself God, and the promised Messiah. He will deceive people for 3.5 years more, until the Jews draw the line, even though they are going to be grateful for his handling of the Middle East situation. The whole world will look up to him. When this self-proclaimed Messiah realizes there is no way he's going to win with the Jews, he will want to murder them all. That will be the Battle of Armageddon. By then, the evil forces and Satan will have taken over this entire planet and will have managed to put the number of the beast on all those who refused to take Christ to their hearts. This egomaniac will do anything to bring the world to its knees. He doesn't care if he has to use the doomsday bomb to destroy it. How will he be stopped? We'll take care of that. We are the celestial armies that are standing by. We'll remain vigilant to your world affairs because the balance of the universe is at stake here. What do you mean by the balance of the universe? We've spoken about the health of your planet Earth, how active and vulnerable it is to sunspots and to other attractional forces in the neighboring solar systems, and how cataclysms are practically around the corner. Right, I said, recalling our previous sessions. Rama became very still and somber, staring into space for some time, as if she were in a trance. Finally, she said, if your people continue tampering with the equilibrium of the universe by exploding atomic bombs, it could mean disaster for more than just your planet. Dropping a couple of those powerful bombs could split your planet in 2 or 3 parts. This means one less force of attraction that we have to fight the effects of Hercules in our solar system. How would you interfere? Ah, to you that's classified information, but let it be no secret that we have our UFO bases throughout the world. You've seen one? Yes. We've had our UFO bases on this planet ever since the continent of Atlantis went down some 12,000 years ago. The other two doors of the Earth are in the polar regions, with a few entrances like Lake Titicaca, between Peru and Bolivia. I'll also tell you that from our bases we can monitor all communications in your world, so we can see what's going on. Really? You've said many times that you people are preparing the ground for the second coming of Christ, that you're the apocalyptical angels, the armies of heaven. Is it your job to get people turned on to Christ or to keep an eye on us earthlings so we don't blow ourselves apart? Both. We're scientists who can give you straight answers about God, the universe and the creation of man. We're also standing by because only the eternal God of creation knows when these moments will be taking place. How is it that UFOs are going to become public knowledge? We're just going to continue talking to people all over the world, contacting anybody who wants to give us a chance to seal their foreheads. We have no contact patterns because we don't want governments to establish a particular pattern, then they'll start shooting at us. We want the people of the world to get adjusted to the idea of our presence, to understand that we are here on a friendly basis. Then when it gets to be known that flying saucers are circulating in the skies, they won't think we're invaders. Because we're not. We're here to assist the human race. You keep telling me that all these things are going to click into place. The final days of Armageddon will have a formula, right? It's like saying that a bunch of elements will come together and trigger the events as foretold in the prophecies. These are a church, a nation, a race of people, Satan, the political figure, the Antichrist, you extraterrestrials, and all these other things on my list. When they all meet, what will happen? Then this will be a great day of the glory of God. His Son will be walking on the earth again, but not as a lamb. This time Jesus Christ will show his power and his glory. What about the greatest nation in the world today? Will it take an active part in the events? It already has. Can't you see how much hate and antagonism is being accumulated against this great society of yours? They lose face in front of nations that at one time looked to them for protection and support. There are only so many wars that a country can fight at the same time, even if they are to keep its economy going. A nation used to having everything it pleases is now being shaken by energy shortages. Other nations will take advantage of its situation. Terrorism, bombings, racial unrest, political corruption, scandals, cities going bankrupt, drugs, cancer, depression, confusion, crime, mental illness, alcoholism, corruption, loss of moral values, organized crime and abuse of nuclear energy are all prevalent today. Remember that history repeats itself. The conditions of today take you back to what happened 12,000 terrestrial years ago. I'm talking about Atlantis. They abused their energy, and used it to destroy human beings like you and me. At that time, Atlantis had to have its moment of confrontation with the truth after a previous détente. When they could no longer hold the peace with the celestial angels, and they went to war, which threatened the equilibrium of the universe. There were battles fought in space, and nuclear warfare was present, which made the hole where the Mediterranean Sea is today, the weakest part of the Earth. Remember also that our dear friend Herculebus was around. Don't you think that could have caused the sinking of the Atlantean continent? 12,000 years. Of course, that's the orbit of the cold planet twice. Then this 6,666-year cycle is about to be completed, bringing with it the Age of Deluges, Noah's Ark, Sodom and Gomorrah. If only I could find some scientific evidence. You speak of Atlantis with such authority that you're quite convincing. But to me, this kind of stuff is still debatable. How can you say things like that, after so many thousands of books have been written on the subject? But you want to be scientific about it. In 1910, Alfred Wegener at Cambridge got all the support he needed to demonstrate that the continental shelf of South America and Africa fit perfectly in their submerged parts. Let's get away from science a little and take a look at what some of the occultists have to say about Atlantis. The one who you will respect the most, Edgar Cayce, by going into some kind of astral projection, was able to uncover what we call the fourth dimension in some of his amazing readings. This man will be able to get his spirit in tune with the eternal thought of creation. He'll place Atlantis in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and will say that Atlanteans were able to travel by air and underwater, that they used electricity and nuclear energy, that they had knowledge of cosmic rays and that their aircraft were built on bases which defied the laws of gravity. Wasn't Madame Blavatsky born in Russia in 1831? I asked. I read that she went all over the East, mainly to India and Tibet, searching for religions that would link us to ancient wisdom and philosophies. She had much to say about Atlantis. In 1875, she founded the Theosophical Society. She was attacked by the church and ridiculed when she claimed that all her writings were inspired through telepathic dictations from her Eastern masters. / That's nothing new in this world, they've been doing things like that for some time. You asked me how the Silence Group operates, this is it. Madame Blavatsky's case is the most perfect example. They ridiculed her and her followers, even planting people in her group who committed frauds, so they could throw them in jail. I remember reading about this sort of thing in that book they sent me from New York, Gods and Spacemen in the Ancient West. It also said that the Atlanteans believed the universe to be the manifestation of one great thought, which is well corroborated by most of the ancient religions and by some modern scientists today. I remember quite clearly that the planets in our solar system allegiance to the Lords of the Sun. One day when you and I were driving, you told me that the greatest civilizations on this planet have always catered to the sun as a source of life and religious inspirations. I guess you believe that sincerely. Yes, Chicho, I do believe it. And more important, I know it to be true. When you return to your usual lifestyle in a few days, you'll have the chance to seek out all this information. Usually one book or study will lead you into another. The only thing I have left to say is that all those lost civilizations, Atlantis, Lemuria, Poseidon, did exist. They're so far behind us in time that history is not able to reach them. But that doesn't mean they didn't leave any records, or at least some indication of what they were like. It's the fourth dimension that will help make some kind of communication link between our world today and these past civilizations. Tomorrow morning we're going to get into what the fourth dimension is, and how knowledge of it will help you in your studies. Is the fourth dimension something related to astral projection and the world beyond? Not exactly the world beyond, more of a scientific and advanced study of Ananas and Ananites as a spiritual force that can actually take you to many parts of the universe and even connect you with people and events that have occurred, and with those yet to occur. Edgar Cayce is a prime example of someone in your world who mastered these spiritual forces. You mean the Ananas and Ananites theory? God being those positive and negative signs that combined make the units of energy organizing the intimacy of the atom. Those units of energy that are the manifestation of the vibratory center of the universe, God. If you prefer, that is the same essence of our spirits. I'm proud of you, Chicho. I remember these things. It made so much sense to me. I can't turn my back on such enlightenment. I've also read that Edgar Cayce made a prediction that the last existing records of Atlantis were going to be found in a secret subterranean chamber, between the paws of the Sphinx in Egypt. How would you like to take a nice astral projection trip to that secret chamber in the Sphinx? That would be far out. How is it that when you astral travel to places you've never seen that you can still see and sense things? You're talking about the time you saw that March 15th Time magazine in a self-trance, when you could not only see, but also feel the moisture. It's because you were able to enter the fourth dimension and were able to enter another physical form. You're also able to reproduce your physical form at a distance while your body sleeps comfortably somewhere else. That physical form isn't matter, is it? No. It's merely a reflection of your body, Ananites and Ananas that can be seen, but not touched. There are no atoms there. A spirit is able to move freely in space and go through thick concrete walls. Spiritism and mediumism are also part of the fourth dimension. When we start taking trips into some secret chambers where no man on this planet has been able to go with his physical body, it'll be of great benefit to you. Because you'll see some of the ancient texts and have the rare opportunity to view some of the most valuable teachings on your planet. Are you going to help me do this? We'll project that together. Why do you do all these nice things for me? I've been such a pain to you. Well, that shows you we always practice what we teach. Now let's go to bed. Tomorrow will be a busy and informative day. I lay awake for a while, watching Rama sleep. Reviewing some of the things she told me. I thought about the fourth dimension and her saying that as soon as I understood it, Most of the material not available to me now would be mine to analyze through astral projection. It was going to be difficult to share this information with anybody, though, because it would sound so fictional. I still found it difficult to believe myself. Until now, I'd been relatively silent about my enjoyable astral trips, almost certain no one would ever believe me. Then I remembered the people in whose company I would be sharing this ridicule: George Adamski, Lobsang Randpa, Edgar Cayce, and Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Then I didn't feel so bad. Chapter 14. The Fourth Dimension. Rama and I were up early the next morning. It was a weekday, and there were few people around. The sun wasn't out, in fact, it looked like it might rain. We had our breakfast and decided to take a ride to a nearby town, Jor. On our way, we saw the site of ancient Inca caves. Rama said many groups had gone into the caves to study them, and some had never come out again. One person from a missing group who did return came out of the caves with his clothes torn, unable to speak, and completely insane. He was carrying two pieces of corn made out of pure 24 karat gold. These caves are said to connect with a network of roads running underneath the whole Inca Empire, Rama explained. I remained silent as she told me this story, because I remembered that on one of my previous visits to Peru, while in the city of Cuzco, I'd been told that two young men had gone into a church in downtown Cuzco, where they found a secret entrance to a cave. They went into the caves and disappeared. When one of them finally emerged, he was foaming at the mouth and was clutching some pieces of pure gold, babbling about finding a whole underground city beneath the Andes Mountains. At that time, everyone dismissed the story and forgot about it. Would you like to take a look? Rama asked. Well, maybe from the outside, I said. As we approached the cave entrance, Rama told me about a book coming out, The Gold of the Gods, by Erich von Däniken, that would explain how the Incas were related to the stars and life on other planets. She suggested I read it. 279 by this time, the sun had come out and was shining brightly. That put us in the mood for a picnic and we started looking for a pleasant spot. We chose a place on top of a hill overlooking the whole panorama of Mantaro Valley. As we settled down, we began our session. She discussed the similarities between the Incas and Lamas in Tibet. Both cultures taught the concept of the third eye and man's connection to the stars. She reminded me that many years ago Lobsang Rangpa wrote about the third eye and how it connects the physical body and the spirit. Love God and your fellow human beings, is the basic theme of all the esoteric teachings of man throughout history, she said. Anybody with a certain amount of culture should have at least an elementary awareness of the schools we've been discussing. You mean the Rosicrucians? The magicians of Zarathustra, Madame Blavatsky and her Theosophical Society, the Asans, the Tibetan Lamas, the Order of Aquarius, metaphysics, and all the so-called Hermetic initiates? Yes, but names aren't important. Since the beginning of written history, these esoteric centers have taught the same things, many under very tight secrecy and severe discipline, and only to a chosen few. Why the secrecy? They had to carefully screen those with whom they shared these teachings, because the knowledge of such truths meant the development of new powers and faculties that could cause tragedies and wars in the hands of the wrong people. You mean learning these things could be that powerful, that people who didn't have pure intentions could cause disasters? Correct. Imagine the absolute control of matter, and its intimate relationship with energy going far beyond the atom, in the hands of people deciding the destinies of the world. The kind of people who enjoy seeing other people suffer and die. In the fourth dimension, we're dealing with cosmic energy, which could wipe out an entire planet faster than any of your atomic bombs. That's why these teachers chose only those few who would use their understanding of these forces for benign purposes, such as spiritual development and the knowledge of God. There's no way that a teacher of this cosmic force would call Richard Nixon and ask him to come and master the secrets of the fourth dimension. You came to me out of the clear blue sky, and invite me to be a part of this knowledge. You must have a lot of trust in me. A while ago, I mentioned the gold underneath the Peruvian Inca caves. You went into complete silence and started recalling different things. Whenever I have mentioned this to other people, the first thing that came to their minds was how to find a way down there so they could find the gold. I'm sharing these moments with you because I sense you're not greedy. I think by the time we've finished, you're going to be cultivating your spirit, not searching for a gold mine somewhere. That's why I'm taking the time to talk to you and turn you onto new things. How do you know I won't betray you? I was born with extrasensory perception, what you call the sixth sense. On my planet, everyone is born with this third eye. It's part of our physiological bodies. Why don't we have it here on Earth? You do, but it's not cultivated. The ancient Peruvians perforated an opening on their skulls in order to have contact with the psychic world. The same operation Lobsang Rampa had on his forehead. After you mentioned this to me earlier, I went to a museum in Lima. I saw the trepanations on the skulls, filled with gold and silver plaques. The museum attendant told me it was some kind of brain surgery performed by Inca surgeons. After that, I read a book by Raymond Drake, which compares the Tibetan lamas and the teachings about the third eye. The whole thing is clicking into place. I'm glad we can use these few days to straighten out all that, because this is actually the beginning of your learning process. Rama, I want to ask you a question, and I would like a straight answer. You know me well enough by now to know I won't lie to you. I'm already sensing your question, go ahead. I can accept the idea of religion, only if it doesn't interfere with my promiscuous activities. How does Jesus feel about people who copulate for the pure pleasure of it? Can they catch the 144,000 boat? It's in the commandments, thou shalt not do it. Look, if we go into the very primitive teachings on earth, the Bible, say nothing about the sex act itself being bad. As I told you before, it's the work of Satan to restrict sexual activity, to make it seem dirty, or sinful, a tool, an item of trade, to be used for political bribery, blackmail, and swindling. Then it's no longer pure or pleasurable. I think you're asking me if Jesus would consider you evil because of your active libido. By earth standards, people may judge you for that. But, cosmically speaking, that's nothing to be ashamed of, providing, of course, it doesn't harm your fellow human beings or go against nature while you enjoy the pleasures of the flesh. As far as you or sex being evil, you're right when you say you're a product of the society in which you live. If two consenting people want to enjoy the physical pleasure of life because they know it'll feel good, they're being spiritual and loving towards one another. They're being good Christians. When two people vibrate at a certain even frequency, they're mutually blessed. The more they enjoy it, climax together, one beautiful mass of energy will generate from their bodies. An energy that is peaceful and, you better believe, beautiful. The God that lives inside you enjoys the gift of life. There are even some parts of the world where the sexual act is a form of prayer. It is called Tantric Yoga. Does that answer your question? Well, I have another one. Did Jesus ever, I mean, to the best of your knowledge, have such desires? He was a man like any other man. Having a beautiful sexual experience with someone is not sinful. But if you've connived to get someone, say someone young and inexperienced, into bed by telling her you'll make her into a movie star, that's not good. Now you know better. Get your satisfaction in peace. Tell me some more about the fourth dimension, I said, changing the subject. There's no such thing as a scientific explanation for miracles and supernatural planes, other than what you and I know as the third force. One thing can't be denied, miracles and supernatural powers, created by forces that go beyond your understanding, have existed and have happened. Events like the opening of the Red Sea for the Jews to escape the armies of Ramses II, and Jesus turning water into wine. If these kinds of events happen and continue to happen without any explanation from modern science, we have to at least allow for the presence of an unusual force generating these events. In your world today, man is about to enter the door that will take him into the secrets of what we're calling the fourth dimension.